Pittsburgh Section, National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History Number 2. My name is Marvin Herzog. My respondent's name is Albert Henry Brunwasser. Today is Saturday, January the 28th, 1995. Let's go back just a little bit and talk about your religious experiences. Where were you bar mitzvah?
I was bar mitzvah at the... It was a shul on Crawford Street. I can't remember the name of that shul. It wasn't Paul Zedek. But I attended the cheder that was managed and sponsored by Shar Torah and Rabbi Borch Jaffe. Borch Jaffe. J-A-F-F-E. I attended the cheder, which was located on Crawford Street, but I was bar mitzvah from another shul because Paul Zedek had ceased to have services and was out in Squirrel Hill.
I see. Did you then continue with your religious education and participation after
no,
that?
No, there wasn't any formal Jewish education after Bar Mitzvah. It ended, except for attending services at the synagogue. And years went by until we joined out here in the South Hills, and they had some special adult courses, which I found very beneficial in attending.
Are you active at the temple?
I'm not active. I attend service regularly. I was at services this morning, and I will be at services Sunday morning. I attend fairly regular, but I'm not active in the synagogue. Perhaps we were more active when our children were attending.
Sure. There's a fairly active JCC here in South Hills. Do you participate there at all?
Only to send my membership dues.
That's important. Well, let's continue with your life history after graduation from college. Can you tell us where were you employed at that time?
I noted that my grandfather sent me a newspaper announcement that the city of Pittsburgh was reorganizing their health department, and I applied to the reorganized city of Pittsburgh health department, and interestingly enough, a principal member of the city of Pittsburgh health department, the reorganized unit, was from Michigan State. He, unknown to me, he had notified some of my professors at Michigan State about the same newspaper article that they were recruiting professional or college graduates. For the first time at the health department, I applied and join the city of Pittsburgh, and this individual whose name was Herb Dunsmore. And during my early days with the city of Pittsburgh, the citizens of Pittsburgh were very anxious to create a modern health department to be able to address all the needs as best they could of the people of Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh had a lot of environmental problems. Clean air, clean water, food service, housing, and they, Citizen Advisory Group, was very active, very responsive, and brought about a major change in the city of Pittsburgh. The director of the City of Pittsburgh Health Department, when I first joined it, was Dr. I. Hope Alexander, who was a specialist in chest work. He was a thoracic-type specialist. And he had a limited period of time and retired. And Herb Dunsmore was the principal responsible manager, if you will, or administrator of the health department. And since I had this special training at Michigan State and background in food technology, and the City of Pittsburgh Advisory Health Group wanted something done about clean air, they initiated the first clean air legislation in the United States. The City of Pittsburgh, as well as the county, they were two separate governmental units operating at the same time. They also were concerned about clean water and what we're doing about our waste water. And, as I stated, housing was atrocious in Pittsburgh. Food service was not what you would call meeting the requirements. So this new era brought on some change and improvement in the environment that hadn't been that was very much needed, and got underway in 1948. I graduated Michigan State in 1948, and I was working at the City of Pittsburgh Health Department in 1949.
Was that during the so-called First Renaissance with Mayor David Lawrence?
Correct. So Lawrence was a most unusual individual. I, as a youngster, had by chance an opportunity to participate for the health department with him on matters relating to housing, food service, and clean air. Both Lawrence and R.K. Mellon, General Mellon, decided that they were going to do something about the health of the people of Pittsburgh, and they went about accomplishing that objective. Pittsburgh was ranked at the time at the bottom of the list. They made it possible for the professional employees to be recruited and employed, to raise that level up at a time when Pittsburgh was then ranked in the top five in providing health services to its residents. And then these same two individuals, then Mayor Lawrence and General Mellon, decided that if this worked in the City of Pittsburgh, we then are going to get behind and create a county health department, in which the city health department was then folded into this now larger health department and led the way for the state of Pennsylvania to initiate an upgraded, improved health services. Both Lawrence, Mellon, and the results of the good work that was done in the City of Pittsburgh Health Department. And I was a small part of moving the City of Pittsburgh health programs forward, and then part of the county program, of which I was a part of for 40-some years.
Where does Pittsburgh stand today in the health picture in the United States?
Pittsburgh still has a lot of very committed professional employees. But it's very easy in government to lose your sights and your mission and what you're all about. But as we were talking earlier, I believe we Jews have a mission, a number of missions. One of them is to help our fellow mankind. I'm sure that actually 43 years that I was involved with public health, I enjoyed every minute of it. But the driving force for me was helping people. With the health department, at least my involvement, I derived a tremendous amount of job satisfaction out of knowing that I could help people that couldn't help themselves, that couldn't deal and wouldn't have any opportunity to clean up the air. Whatever they did individually could never impact on cleaning the air of Pittsburgh and making it a better place to live. They couldn't individually do something in improving the drinking water. They couldn't individually do anything to turn around the quality of housing. They couldn't individually do too much about the food service. But when we were able to get together with the right kind of professional staff, you can do things to help people.
We'll finalize our discussion now. I wanted to ask you what your thoughts are regarding the seeming present popularity of cleaning up and fixing up the environment generally in this country today, compared to what our situation was when you began in the health department in Pittsburgh.
Very, very provocative question. And I've given an awful lot of thought to that question. We have accomplished a great deal. We have improved the quality of living in this community, this Allegheny County. The question becomes now whether or not we have gone too far in the regulating the lives and the economy of this community. There's such a thing as going too far. We face some very serious problems of the environment in Pittsburgh in 1930. In 1970, we had accomplished and improved in many of these programs. Now we are out here in 1995 expecting to get the last ounce out of the system at great cost. We could get 95% accomplishment at minimal cost. To get the other 5% is going to cost every individual an untold amount of dollars. And I think we have to pause and re-examine and be sure we have the scientific backup to take on that we want to get the other 5%. It may be too costly, and that 5% may not really injure our health. We're out there measuring chemical compounds in the parts per trillion, and we do not know, Marv, whether or not it really has any effect on our health. Yet, we're going to make that expenditure to bring about that last ounce. And I am concerned that if we want to go that direction, I am of the position, I want to know that we have the scientific documentation and there is a health effect on you and I and everyone that lives here. And furthermore, we better look at what it's going to cost us. What is the cost?
Thank you for a wonderful discourse coming from an expert. We certainly appreciate listening to a fine, educated opinion. Thank you very much. Al, we talked at some length about the environmental situation in Pittsburgh, and I know how intimately involved with that situation you were back in the days of Davy Lawrence. Specifically, what kind of problems were there in Pittsburgh regarding clean air in the 30s? Can you give me some examples of what kind of a living situation there was?
The basic industry of the area was steel making, and in order to make steel, you have to have coal to treat to make coke in order to produce steel. So that the type of coal that existed in this area, in this region, was high sulfur coal, and it then produced, when it was burned, SO2, which then leads to sulfuric acid, and was one of the major problems, plus all the particulate matter that comes out of making coke. And the individual homes were burning that same kind of coal, producing the same kinds of emissions. So that Pittsburgh faced heavy particulate matter, sulfur dioxide, which leads to sulfuric acid, and it did two things. The heavy particulate matter made it very difficult when the weather conditions were right for that to rise, so it remained in this valley, and was then a very difficult city to live in. And it was known as the term that used. It was just a dirty city.
Yeah.
And it was due to the production of steel, the coal necessary, plus the use by the homeowners, plus the fact that all of the other commodities were hauled in here by rail, so they used steam engines, which also belched this heavy emission. And there were days that I can remember that there was such a level of dirt and pollution that you couldn't see at 12 o'clock. You could not see daylight. So that this was a principal environmental problem. And that problem, making steel, also requires an awful lot of water. So the rivers provided a supply of water, which they used in the production of coal to coke to steel, and polluted the waste from the production of steel went directly into the rivers. So we face not only the air problems, but we face serious drinking water problems. And we also, because we had the rivers, the Monongahela particularly, which then flowed into the Ohio, we then dumped all of our human waste and everything else into the river. So it was an open, sore. The rivers were open sores. And it was a coming together by two real giants, General R.K. Mellon and Mayor David Lawrence have decided. If Pittsburgh was to continue on in the future, they must address the environmental problems. And Pittsburgh and Allegheny County had the first laws regulating air pollution. And that is a first. And it was put in place, and Mellon and Lawrence and, were able to bring about, at great economic expense, the reduction of that high sulfur coal. The use of high sulfur coal. They also took on a program to clean up the rivers and to prohibit the discharge of polluted water into the rivers. They also supported the construction of the Allegheny County Sanitary Authority, one of the largest waste treatment plants in this part of the eastern United States, and were very committed, and that's key. These men were committed to see that Pittsburgh was cleaned up and was no longer a dirty, unhealthy city to live in. And I don't think without that commitment that Pittsburgh would really be here today. It couldn't do it.
With the advent of people who were so intent upon cleaning up the city, there must have been a great deal of controversy between people like Frick, for example, who was involved with the production of coal, that being a natural resource in this area, and people who were interested in cleaning up the environment and getting rid of all of the air pollution as a result of steel mills and homes burning coal and so on. And well, today there's no coal at all.
Well, I have to respond in this manner. Whatever made Richard King Mellon take a position that he was committed to cleaning up and improving the health and the environment of this region, I don't know the details of what brought him to that conclusion. But once he made that decision, Mr. Frick, Mr. Benenden, and all the other coal barons and all the other steel moguls, R.K. Mellon's word was going to be carried on. And you're right. You know, many of these people, they didn't buy into this thing. But Mellon, R.K., and the Mellon family, you know, they were on the... They not only were involved with all the major industrial industries of this nation, they sat on the board of an awful lot of other subsidiary, the automotive industry, General Motors. I mean, they could influence the decisions to do things here in this region. And we then went forward with the DISCO. He then said, we're going to find ways to burn coal without it being a problem. We're going to clean up the rivers. We're not going to continue to discharge waste water without treating it. Without R.K. Mellon and Lawrence representing government, they were able to put it together. I don't think it would be done today. There's not that kind of leadership today. There is not in this region and or this state that kind of leadership. That I'm sure that they had their people that didn't accept their commitment and perhaps thought they had some other alternative. I don't know what the other alternatives are, but I do know I was part of observing and being part of that these two giants made it possible for Pittsburgh to be to correct its environmental problems. Without it, you couldn't do it today.
I'm interested in knowing whether there were any committed people in the clergy who were at the time, I know, very articulate people, like, for example, Dr. Freehoff at Rhode of Shaw.
others who spoke out, spoke to the fact that there were difficulties with the environment that involved human health and human welfare.
Well, I would suggest Abe Wolk. You know the name Abe Wolk, Councilman?
Oh, yeah.
Abe Wolk? Abe Wolk was a very important member of Dave Lawrence's team. And Abe Wolk was a man who spoke on behalf of the people and was a great influence, in my judgment, on Dave Lawrence.
Many of us who came from other cities labeled Pittsburgh as being a place to make money. The reputation was that if you came from Pittsburgh, you were rich. But we knew that to offset that reputation, there was the fact that there was this terrible pollution problem. Was it true that people purposely sold off human life in order to make additional money? Was that the bottom line, really?
Well, in the early days of the steel industry, yes. No. The answer to that is clearly yes. There is documented evidence that the coal industry, the steel industry, and all of the supportive industries, heavy industry, they would send recruiters. You read about it today in the farm and agriculture, but they would send recruiters to the Eastern European areas, and they would secure the services of individuals and make arrangements for their transportation to Pittsburgh, and they would either put them in a coal patch or put them in a community that was associated with steel. And these, at that particular period of time, they had these company stores. You worked for a coal company, you had to buy your living, your food, you paid your shelter, all to the company store, which was owned by the coal company. Now, it wasn't that clear an arrangement with steel, but the people they brought over to work in the steel mills also lived in selected areas. And right on Fifth Avenue, where the yeshiva had a building, there was a bathhouse known as the Soho Bathhouse on Fifth Avenue. The reason that they had that bathhouse there was that all the employees that worked in J&L down on Second Avenue lived in that area above the mill. They didn't have toilets. They didn't have bathrooms. They didn't have any way, so they went to the bathhouse, the Soho Bathhouse, to take their bath. Now, I want to say something about coal. Coal has gone through hell. The people who worked in coal, Marvin, went through hell. And this for Bernice, too. When I responded and said they had these recruiters, they had these people go over and pick up whole families, pay their transportation, put them in these coal patches. There's one other thing. They had the company store, but they used to have chain link fence around the housing. These people that come in, they stayed there. They stayed in that coal patch. That was their full life at a very minimal wage. They could never get out because they go to the company store to buy all their goods and supplies, and their paycheck went to pay off. So they never could get out. And they were there for many years. And the stories, I saw this with my own eyes in some of these coal patches, that these conditions exist. They didn't really begin to do anything until John L. Lewis got involved with coal mining, and Phil Murray, both from this region, got involved with forming the unions.
Now, during that same period, there were also Jewish people who came from the Balkan, Eastern European countries to Pittsburgh. Somehow or another, we don't picture those early Jews as being members of the group that were recruited into heavy industries and almost into a slave labor situation. Are you acquainted with what happened to these Jewish Jewish immigrants in Pittsburgh in those days?
They didn't enter coal mining, and they did not have many in the steel making industry. There was still, in my judgment, there was the Jew was a Jew, and he was not to become part of that labor force. The other part of it, I also believe, was the Jews had come over from the shtetls. They were leaving a life that was unbearable. I mean, it was absolutely the bottom of the pits. And they all